This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
As always, a warm welcome to all my automotive aftermarket peoples. It's Carm Capriotto, Aftermarket Weekly, week 155. And I'm spending it with a good friend of mine, Michael Smith.
Good to see you, Carm. It's good to be here, my friend.
Herzberg Smith and Company, great consultant and M&A expert, and always so much fun to have you on board. We're going to talk a little bit about culture here today, but first, great homage. We're coming to you live on tape from the Dorman OE Fix studio, most likely in a lot of times called my car and cave. So good to have you all here.
Dorman Products creates hundreds of new automotive replacement products every month. Part of what makes Dorman so unique is their ideation of new and innovative products. They have dedicated teams all across the U.S., Mexico, and Canada looking for new product ideas. Since every solution starts with a problem, these teams of researchers, field analysts, product specialists, and contributors consistently visit repair shops and make field calls. Now, this is to best understand the problems the industry is facing. In certain cases, Dorman will manufacture aftermarket replacements so you aren't forced to go back to the OE. Other times, experts take it an additional step, further solving what made the original part problematic in the first place. Solving for a problem is what powers the innovation engine at Dorman. Dorman Products has become an incredible engine for innovation. They are constantly bringing new replacement parts to the automotive industry, and they routinely release tens of thousands of parts across all different categories. Now, why do they do all of this? To enable technicians the freedom to fix their customers' cars and trucks. To do this, Dorman has dedicated teams focused on different aspects of the vehicle to ensure that they are meeting the needs of the aftermarket. Although a lot of their parts are reverse engineering of original equipment, they also redesign and redefine solutions such as their loaded knuckles or programmable electronic power steering rack. Dorman has invested in these OE Fix innovations to help you save time, your customer money, and prevent vehicles from coming back to your shop. In certain cases, Dorman will manufacture aftermarket replacements so you aren't forced to go back to the OE. Hey, want to know more about Dorman? Visit DormanProducts.com/tour.
Again, thanks a lot, Dorman. Appreciate your constant support. Michael, look, I saw you speak and do a great keynote at the Institute Summit in St. Petersburg. I walked away with a brand new number in my mind, and I have challenged that number as to how many shops we have in our industry. And I keep going to people. I says, "You think Michael was right?" And I forgot to ask him where he got that number that we only had 127,000 shops in the U.S. And if that was the case, I asked how many shops closed in your area, and they said, "Well, few, but not that many, I think." So help us understand where we stand today after you, I think, triple researched that.
The federal government's where I got the number, and obviously it was different numbers in different places, and so we had some fun looking it back up again. When I first started looking at this industry, there were 275,000 companies, and here's how I got the numbers. It's the NAICS codes. It's the new version of what used to be the SIC codes, and the number, guys, for general repair is 811111. And that was where I went to a federal government site and got the number 127. When I started in this industry 6-7 years ago, helping some friends and sort of getting more involved, it was 275,000. Then it went to 250. Then it went to 234. And it surprised me too. And there are multiple places you can look up these numbers. The place I went said 127. I'm like, huh, this is moving faster than I thought. I didn't do too many cross checks and the federal government's numbers. In fact, I think we all think it's more like 234 at this point than 127. The note that we were talking about was it has come down from 275. So the general principles are this industry shrinking, and it's not just individual shops, it's shop systems, right? But the industry shrinking into a smaller number of increasingly bigger players, and that's kind of the game that's at foot. So I happily defer to the 234 idea. It's a little scary that we were half that in a couple of years. Didn't feel right either, but you know, the source is the source. So in either case, it's shrinking.
It does make sense. Thank you for the clarity on that. But I think it's still something we have to pay attention to. Consolidation is a factor. It's so easy to do business today. I'm booked out 2 weeks. Wait a minute, time out. Don't get overconfident that the freight train of opportunity is going to continue because you like making a good loaf of Italian bread. You got to work that thing. And it's just, you know, there's a lot to making a great business. So culture, we want to talk about culture. I talk about culture a lot on the show. Please do not turn this off saying it's another going to be another one of those calm rants about how critical and important culture is going to be. But what I know about culture is it's what we do in the business. It's what we believe in. It's who we are. And it's our values. And it's why we serve. And if you look from the outside and you ask your people, what do you believe? What's the paradigm of what you believe who we are? And if they can't give you that core purpose, those core values back, then they don't even believe they're sitting and working and participating in a great culture.
Culture is this sort of ethereal concept. You're thinking, well, that's interesting. So what does that have to do with me? The thing that Carmen and I talked about coming into this short session together was how I would like to really focus on the fact that leaders, the beginning, the original owners, the leaders that have all come since then, the leaders that you have now, even the way you let the team deal and talk with itself is continuing to frame and form your culture. So it's not just that culture is this thing that we can kind of ignore. Cultures, I often say it's like the personality of your company internally. You know, is it a nice company or is it a mean company? Is it a happy company or an unhappy one, right? Positive or negative. Culture gets set like concrete over time, but you keep adding layers of concrete to it, and it can be better concrete or worse concrete, but it's still there. So culture has this real stabilizing factor for better or for worse. And it really comes back to the leaders you have today are continuing to pour more layers on top. And ideally, it would be the best concrete available, not the old broken stuff that none of us knew about, you know, 30 years ago. So it's a big topic, Carm. It's not just a thing. It's all about how people interact internally. And then you all turn around and then interact externally with customers in your community. And you're making culture every day. Every decision that gets made, every conversation that occurs, you're adding more culture to the baseline. So this is a big deal to understand and how powerful it is. And you can turn your ship around. You can be headed for an iceberg and make an adjustment and go right by that, or you can just crash right in.
We have been of late in the last couple of years making sure that we give some how advice to our listener. Okay, great. I got to go out and do this. I have to become a better leader. How do I do that? And how do I find my purpose? And how do I bring the team together? And how do I, just so that you can appreciate Michael Smith, I just want you to know is if you go to remarkableresults.biz, type in Michael Smith, you'll see five incredible episodes we've done together. This will be the sixth. He's a smart guy, knows what he's talking about. And I have to tell you, there's some of the most fun episodes we've ever done. The grouping stuff that we've done with you, Michael.
We have a lot of silly friends, that's for sure. So,
and you know what? Frankly, podcasts are not always supposed to be on the total serious side. But anyway, the internal personality of the business, does it really start with the selfie? You know, put up the selfie and take the picture and look at it and say, hey, it's all about me making those changes.
Culture starts day one when the owner sits down and starts to have ideas about the company that they want to build or buy. See, if you buy a company from somebody else, guys, a lot of us out there have done that. You have inherited their culture for better or for worse. And now you show up and you're this next thin layer of concrete that starts the concrete stacking. You buy a mess, you got a mess. And we all know that anybody who's in the shop buying business, one of the great due diligence components is making sure you understand the team, the leadership group, the culture, how they interact in the market. It's way beyond Google stars, right? It's just that does not answer the culture question. So the point of all that is that culture builds slowly with the leadership team. And how do you start looking at this? Culture starts with the core values that you have. If you started from scratch and opened your garage door for the first time, your core values are the baseline that you build all this on. You know, we have a leadership model that we teach, and culture is embedded in the very first component of a 7-component system. If you don't have your context, we call it, the purpose of your company and your character of your company outlined, you're on rocky ground already because you're going to end up with what comes to the table rather than having a chance to articulate it.
Okay, so how do I start?
That's right there. Day one, you got to have a purpose, set of purpose statements, and a set of character statements so that you can say to everybody involved, even in a broken culture, guys, we're going to raise the bar relative to what the rest of our industry and all industry does, right? We're going to stand for something noble.
I've got a company. My culture's weak. So, okay, I'm all bought in because everything I hear about is that. Do I go into my own personal think tank or do I say, team? Listen, let me just share one thing with you. Here was my vision of why I started this business. Let's build on that. And I'm willing to, you know, feel good about that, but I want to feel good about what you believe in and what you want this to become. Do you go to the well?
Yeah, absolutely you do. And I think it starts with you, the senior leader, if it's the owner, or if you've got the owners in the back and a senior leader's in place. Starts there, because the final decisions, as they all move up the food chain, there is a core value system making final decisions, right? Which is sort of the core of what the current culture enhancements are about. But you can go to the leadership team too. Start there. Have your key leaders sit down with you and say, hey guys, we're going to do a whiteboard session. We're going to put up three pieces of white paper. The one on the left says what's working about our culture. The one in the middle is what's not working about our culture. And the third one is what could we do better in the future? And that three-step system, by the way, is a great way to analyze about any topic you want to talk about. But so you get the team, the leaders to say, well, here's what's working. It's the negative sandwich, right? There's positive on either end, and the middle one is where the mess is. And so then when you get to the middle chart, it's like, so what's not working about this? And please, leader, shut up at that point. One of the hardest things about facilitating a meeting, I'll just tell everybody with your people, is not joining the conversation to either affirm or correct. And if you want real brainstorming, the guy with the pen in his hand has to be a facilitator, not the senior leader. Just be quiet and write down what they say, right? But listen to what they say. And the leaders themselves will have an opinion. If you want, do a brief survey of your teams. So the people in the field will tell you internally what your culture is really like too. You all can have lots of leadership meetings and be very self-deceived, if you will, about what you'd like it to look like. You ask your team and they're like, well, this is what we think is not right. And you guys looking at the middle list for them going, what the heck? This is not what we had on our middle list, right? Guys, you can go to your customers and ask them about their experience in a survey. You can also look at, and this is, people are doing this now, using AI to go out and put your company name in there and ask for the keyword search of what's most talked about in the customer review section of the world out there. AI collects it and says, here's the top six words that people use to describe your company. That's an interesting exercise to see if that aligns at all with what's either in your heads about culture or even what's on the wall about culture. So there's lots of ways, Carm, to take a look at this in an assessment manner, right? How are you really doing at this point? Guys, everybody has a culture. For better or for worse, you have a culture. Even if you don't think you do, you do. It's just the way life is, right? So
that's a scary idea to go to AI and ask them.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Computer.
You're not asking them for what the best culture should be. All you're doing is using it to search data, right? That's it. Don't ask AI what it should look like, because that I'm not sure I'd trust at this point. So,
what does the world think of us? And what are they saying in conversations I'm not paying attention to?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Isn't that great?
We're hiding behind the fact that I got a toxic culture. And I realize that I'm never, ever, I'm kidding myself, I'm kidding my family, I'm kidding my people, I'm kidding the marketplace. How do we try to change that toxicity? Yeah.
What do you do, right? That's another conversation with your three sheets of paper with your leadership team first. Put it on the wall, close the door, say, we're not leaving this room until we beat this thing to death. And I've been doing this with my client base because it's kind of the hot topic of the day, if you will. It's this, we call it the toxicity elimination project. It's very straight up. The idea of it is, let's really stop and think about what's going on with regard to what's holding us back. What are the anchors that are holding all of our boats down as we're trying to put water under it and rise the water level and get bigger and better as a company? What are the elements that are holding us down? And to dig into this toxicity question is, again, what's working? You know, we go about this a little bit differently. What is it that toxicity looks like? And then people can write that down and go, and I say to them, think back through your entire career about the toxic people that you've worked with. Describe them to me. And I'm a facilitator. I start writing, and it's bullet point after bullet point after bullet point up on the chart. And, you know, we get pages of these, right? And then I say, well, what is the opposite of toxicity? What's desirable? And then we brainstorm that. Guys, this is with owners and their teams, right? This is the company speaking to itself about the way things really are and how they see things. Then you get the list of what you want. And then we say, okay, what's it look like here right now? And the end of that is to say, are there any toxic people that we've been avoiding the topic? And God forbid they're high producers, because then it gets really awkward. Oh my God, it's my top service advisor. They're the biggest pain in the ass in the world. They're completely self-centered, all about the money. Don't treat the customers right, but geez, if I lost that revenue, that would be hard. Or a lead tech or whatever, right? A top A tech who's just impossible to work with. And the point of it is, I'll say to people, listen, I know the short-term hits you're going to take, but you really got to think about, what if you cut that cancer, that toxicity out of your body. What would it look like? Ouch, short-term hit. Yeah, but in the long run, you know what happens when you do that? The rest of the team comes back and kind of taps you on the shoulder quietly one day, leans into you and whispers, what took you so long? And thanks for getting that done. Every time.
Oh my God, yes. That's happened to me. Those are those V8 moments, those wake-up calls where, geez, boss, I just can't believe you waited this long. It's not like you to have tolerated that.
No, that's right. And here's the thing. You go to all this work to put your core values and your character and your purpose and all that on the wall, and you get everybody all excited about it. Then you go back to work, right? Now, let's assume you're trying to change your toxic culture to a more positive one. You do all the groundwork. You nail the stuff up on the wall. Everybody's held accountable to it except for you, the owner, and except for these toxic people who are high producers that you don't want to get rid of. What do the rest of the people say to themselves about how serious you are about all that work you just put into what's on the wall? It means nothing. And let me tell you, the knock on culture and mission statements and vision and all that is absolutely that, you know, 40 years ago, the big companies wrote all this stuff down. They have never stewarded them for the last 40 years. And when you look at what it looks like on the wall versus what life really looks like, they don't have anything to do with each other. And so then the people are like, well, then I don't have to pay any attention to it. And then you just stay in toxicity. And so that's kind of the whole point is, guys, and I ask the guys that I work with, can we make a 1 quarter long commitment that we sit down 1 quarter from now, you know, 3 months, and there's a process to working this out, which is maybe another show, because I know we're time short here. But it's like at the end of the 3 month period, are you willing to make a firm commitment that when we do this exercise in 3 months, that you will not have a toxicity problem in your company in any way? Are you willing to make the commitment to take it on seriously and to change it? And people, after we talk about this and they see how ugly this is and how it holds everything back and hurts the people who are the other good producers, the real good people, they're just like, hell yeah. And then it's like, and so we've sort of released all these folks. And a lot of this first, second quarter work in 23 has been about toxicity elimination. And again, brother, these are just the top people in the industry. And I don't mean to be funny about that. The people who get this and actually sit down and do it turn themselves more productive. They make more money. They have better customer relationships. How can you say to the community, we're going to be a place you can come and trust if you don't have trust inside your own company? You're not going to turn around and pretend externally with your brand. Brand and culture are the internal and external version of your company's personality, right? You can't be BSing yourself externally. And then people show up at the front desk and what actually happens in the transactions are broken from a cultural perspective. So it's, we got to get it all together at the same time and farting around with it. Sorry about my French, right? It's like goofing around with it and not getting serious with it and putting it off because it could be painful is just delaying the problem. And in some cases, it's actually making it worse. Because everybody who wants to pull the rope then doesn't pull because they're like, why would I bother to work at it if the boss who put this on the wall isn't even serious about it? So final thought is you got to walk this stuff out as leaders too, guys. If the leaders don't walk the talk first, owner first, this stuff doesn't happen. So you can't put it on the wall, hold everybody accountable if you, the owner, aren't prepared to walk this out either. So huge red flag. They're a huge yellow flag, right? Waving it hard. You guys got to get serious about this.
Let me share a little bit of a secret to my listener. I've never done this in 8 years. 8 years, I've never, ever said what I'm about ready to say.
Wow. Here it comes, guys.
You need to listen to every interview I've ever done like I listen to them. And what I like to listen for is the things that my guest doesn't say that affects me. Everybody listens to certain things and bam, synopses go off and you take things away. My biggest takeaway from your last 4 minutes, when you said, hey, listen, can you do this in the next quarter? Can you make me that commitment? I don't believe individually you can do that. As an individual, that goes, here's what I heard, the power of coaching and networking and accountability.
Absolutely.
That you have to someone else. That's what Michael was really saying, is that it really requires, as good as you can be, what a great leader you are, every one of us in some form or fashion needs a couple of pillars put up left or right of us so that we keep on at least a singular pathway. Yeah, you got to go left or right as we're making changes and we're growing and we're adapting, but we still need someone to say, can you do it in the next 3 months? And when you say yes, it changes the world.
Sure does. And it's equivalent to the old story of, you know, the arms up in battle. And as long as the arms were up, the war was being won. And the concept was two guys came alongside because the owner trying to do this by themselves, holding their arms up, couldn't do it. So you put a couple of folks there to help you hold them up and the arms stay up. And here's the point. It's what you said, Carm. Look, there's things you can't see because they're friends of yours. They started the business with you, whatever. And you're trying to fix them and you want to give them a little bit more time. And the person who's standing next to you who doesn't have the emotional connection to it can see the damage that it's causing. And it's like, look, you know, you need to move now. And those kinds of relationships where you know each other well, you trust each other as the arm holder upper guys, right? The pillars that you're talking about, those are the ones where we really encourage each other to sometimes make the tough calls and have the tough conversations. And, you know, another show on, are there such things as tough conversations? I don't think so. I think when you help somebody to get their act together in life, even if they don't like it in the moment, they're better off in the long run. So we shouldn't shy away from these things, even if people aren't going to like the conversations we have. But man, to avoid it, it's just like leaving cancer. And is it stage one or stage four? I don't care. It's cancer. It's going to be stage four if you don't deal with it at some point. So get it out now. I'm with you on the pillars, right? There are people standing next to you that can see it, call it, love you. You know that. You trust them. In some ways, it helps you to move, right? It would be harder to move by yourself. So important what you're saying.
Yeah, I just said the word tough love to somebody just the other day.
Absolutely right.
And people have to realize that that's what it is. Tough and love, when they go together, there's some discipline there, isn't there?
That's exactly right. That's what it's about.
This was great. You know what? I cannot do an Aftermarket Weekly in 20-25 minutes with you ever again. Remind me that you've got to come on for a much longer period of time.
We just get wound up. We have a lot to talk about. So there you go.
I had an employee many years ago that I should have let go, and I didn't, because I believed in the individual. I believed in their capabilities, and they just had this learning block. And I kept waiting, and I kept waiting, and I kept waiting. And the day that the sky opened up and the sun came out, I was proud of my ability to wait, but he wasn't ruining my company because of his toxicity. But I waited and I waited and I worked and I coached and I taught and I trained, and he ended up becoming an incredibly valuable person. So he wasn't toxic. Now, by the way, Dr. Dave Wyman created an episode with us, 713, Handling a Toxic Employee. As a psychologist, Dr. Dave comes on and talked about that. And I just encourage, what we'll do is we'll put the link to Dr. Dave's episode in the show notes for this episode. Michael, I know we didn't change the world in this Aftermarket Weekly, but I promise to the listener and I promise to you that I want you to come back. Let's do some lengthy stuff, because you've got so many other things to help us get over the hump of creating a great, great culture inside of our businesses.
Be my pleasure, Carm. It really would. So looking forward to it.
Thanks so much. Appreciate you as a friend. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yep. You too, buddy. Bye.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.